This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to the Election Day broadcast of Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and we originate from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Polls are open. They'll be open till 8 o'clock, and in Louisiana, over 70% of the voters will cast ballots, a far departure from what happened a year ago in the governor's election, in which Jeff Landry won with fewer than 600,000 votes. Joe Biden, by the way, 4 years ago, lost in Louisiana overwhelmingly, but he got 856,000 votes in his losing quest in our state. He was victorious nationally, of course, but if he were running for governor, that would have been the fourth highest total of all time, behind Edwin Edwards in 1991, Edwin Edwards 83, and Mike Foster in 95. We just don't have as much interest in the statewide elections as we do in the presidential election. And it is because of the race for president that there will be heavy voting in the mayor's election in Baton Rouge, which of course will be much smaller in the December runoff, and there will be a runoff. And in that race, we have three viable contestants. In the mayor-president, Sharon Weston Broome, who's never lost a race, who's won twice. In 2016, she beat Bodie White 52-48%. 4 years ago, she won over Steve Carter by 14 points, 57-43%. And now she is in a race, but this time she is challenged from both sides. On the right side of the spectrum, it's Sid Edwards, the coach from Estruma, who's never run, hasn't voted in almost 9 years, but has been a palatable candidate and will likely get around 30% of the votes. And if he gets a little more than that, he can make a runoff. Ted James, who's never lost a race, a young man who's 25 years younger than the incumbent, who represents a new generation, who is trying to get votes not only from Democrats, but also from Republicans, and that is a tricky minefield of politics anywhere, and particularly here in Baton Rouge. But if he makes a runoff with either candidate, he would likely be the favorite in that runoff. And if he were to run first, who knows what would happen. But there, at this point, appears to be a runoff, and I've said most likely, I thought, between the two Democrats. But I think you could make a viable case that Coach Edwards has a chance. And if he makes a chance, he has a daunting task in winning in December. But that's where we are in the mayor's race. If you'd like to chime in, we will have some guests today, of course, but our number is 877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. And emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. On a side note, independent of politics, it was on this date 5 years ago that we lost one of the great Louisiana treasures in Ernest Gaines, the fabulous writer who did most of his work in San Francisco. And he wrote about Louisiana almost exclusively. Other than When Jesus Came to Market Street, all of his books are about Louisiana, the place he called home, and ultimately he could not resist returning. And he died on this date in 2019 at the age of 86 at his home in Oscar, Louisiana, on Falls River, with his wife, Diane. And we wish her the best today on this anniversary. But Ernest was with us on his last birthday, January 15, 2019, when he turned 86, born on the same date as Martin Luther King Jr., 4 years apart. King was born in 1929 and Ernest in 1933. And he commented that his first book was not published until he was 31 years old. He had a lot of rejections before he hit the literary scene with Catherine Carmier in the year of 1964. So this is the 60th anniversary of his first work that was published as a book. Here's Ernest Gaines.
1964, yeah, my first novel. I've been writing on that book about 5 years, just trying to learn how to write. I spent time at Stanford. As a matter of fact, I'd gone to Stanford based on that book, trying to write that book. And studied with Stegner, Wallace Stegner at Stanford. And spent another 4 or 5 years. I had to come back to Louisiana, as a matter of fact, in 1963, in order to do some more research, to spend some more time here. And then when I went back to San Francisco, the latter part of 63, I finished the novel. But it took me about 5 years to do that. Mm-hmm. Others have not taken me such a long time.
That was Ernest Gaines 5.5 years ago, and unfortunately we lost him. He lived a full life, but 86 by today's standards is not that old. Donald Trump is 78. Joe Biden is 82. And today we're in the midst of a race in which America is divided. And Joe Biden, of course, went by the wayside just over 100 days ago, decided not to make it to the November election, and turned the keys of the kingdom and the Democratic Party over to Kamala Harris, his vice president. She is from San Francisco, and that town has produced not only Kamala Harris, but Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Willie Brown, Jerry Brown, Gavin Newsom, Adam Schiff. They all came from the San Francisco area, and they are giants not only in California but on the national scene. And in California, with 1/8 of the American population, it is certainly an indoctrination in what it takes to become a national candidate. And Kamala Harris has run, I think, a brilliant campaign. James Carville made the statement that Donald Trump couldn't beat Kamala Harris. Only Kamala Harris could beat Kamala. Well, she has not done anything to negate victory, but victory is, of course, not in her grasp. She may win, and the late momentum appears to be moving in her direction, but she had some ground to make up in the last week, and it's probably going to come down to Pennsylvania with its 19 electoral votes. She logged the whole day in Pennsylvania yesterday on election eve for good reason. And the New York Times puts it this way: in the town of Allentown, which produced George and Joey Atiyah, who came to LSU and was immortalized in song by Billy Joel, Donald J. Trump and Kamala Harris closed out their campaigns on Monday in much the same way they started them. The former president claimed that the country was on the brink of ruin, even as his rally crowds appeared to dwindle. And the vice president promised a more united future as her supporters chanted, "We're not going back." In stop after stop, the presidential rivals essentially offered up two competing versions of reality in the final hours before Election Day. Mr. Trump repeatedly raised the specter of unchecked immigration and the dangers of Democratic policies to crowds in North Carolina and Pennsylvania with another stop that closed his campaign in Grand Rapids, third straight times. With a comparatively more optimistic message, Ms. Harris opted to crisscross Pennsylvania, which holds the 19 electoral votes that will likely decide the race. It stops in Scranton and Allentown, with evening rallies planned in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Kamala Harris talked about bolstering the economy and restoring federal abortion rights. She asserted that Americans were exhausted and ready to move on from the politics of the past decade. And with us to talk about the race is someone who's been on the trail. She's been out there campaigning in several states for Kamala Harris. She's been with us a few times, and welcome back, Caitlin Joshua.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How was it out there? And how many states did you crisscross?
Well, I did a small count this morning, and we did right at 16 states, about 40, 50 cities. And multiple times, which was amazing for the last 6 months, first for the Biden team. And as soon as Kamala Harris became the top of the ticket, kept going and rolling with the Reproductive Freedom Tour.
And your message, I think, resonates with women, many women. And if Kamala Harris is to win today, it will likely be because of the Dobbs decision on abortion rights, which is Donald Trump's, according to the evangelicals who have so loyally supported him, his greatest accomplishment. But he is now trying to back away from that. But I think we have a division on that issue, and that issue has probably created this huge gender gap. How do you explain that if the election were only among men, Trump would win in a landslide, and if it were only with women, Harris would win in a landslide?
Mm-hmm. I still think we are having to do a lot of groundwork setting the tone and foundation for people to understand what abortion healthcare really is. I think a lot of times folks do not understand the nuance of pregnancy, and with all due respect, a lot of men don't understand the nuances of pregnancy. And so it takes a lot of time to have those hard conversations, help people connect the dots and understand that abortion healthcare is essential healthcare. And you never know if you'll find yourself in a situation like mine, trying to manage miscarriage or, you know, accentuating circumstance in which a fetus is no longer viable and you need an abortion to save your life. And I think when people understand the full capacity in which healthcare is offered, meaning abortion healthcare offered in all 50 states and women being able to have that access, they hear the horroring stories, because there's a lot of horroring stories that we've seen coming out of the Deep South, coming out of Texas, a lot of these states with the most egregious laws and bans. People are finally starting to kind of connect the dots and understand what abortion healthcare really is. But it takes time. And what I've seen out there on the road is that people are doing the work. They're having those hard conversations. They're speaking with families, and it's really making a difference.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Back in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Eagster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana on Election Day, and your number is 877-217-5757. Caitlin Joshua is in the house. She logged her academic career in her hometown of Baton Rouge and has a degree in biology and a minor in Spanish from Southern University, graduated in 2016. And before her 30th birthday, she has taken the country by storm. She has a personal story about the lack of abortion rights in an emergency. And that story has resonated to the point she was front and center at the Democratic National Convention. And then she was on the trail in 16 states. Tonight she has been invited, and I suspect will be hopping on a plane to Washington, D.C., where Kamala Harris will be at her election night event at Howard University, her alma mater, one of the great HBCUs. And it shapes up as a long night, and we'll see. But Kamala Harris has produced a campaign with great vigor. I think probably the biggest criticism is her running mate. But Tim Walz, one of the ironies of politics is you just never know how it plays. He's apparently helped her more in Iowa than in Minnesota, his home state, where it's close, but Kamala will win Minnesota. But she may win Iowa, and if she wins Iowa, she probably will win the election. But I do think whoever wins Pennsylvania is likely to be the victor, and it is neck and neck in the Quaker state. And Caitlin Joshua, you've been speaking largely on reproductive rights. Do you think that's the biggest issue?
I do. Yeah, I certainly do. I've met hundreds of people across this country in the last several months and had just, you know, the opportunity to hear, again, their harrowing stories and hear how people are finally understanding, like, the need for this access to the care, meeting people that are conservative, Christian, Republican, saying, I am crossing the aisle this election based off of reproductive freedom and the ability to access that care and enshrine the right in all 50 states if we have Kamala Harris in the White House.
Well, my guess is if Donald Trump wins, he will graciously accept. He probably will take some shots before he does. But if he loses, he also will graciously accept a victory that it is not rightfully his, as he did 4 years ago. And my guess is that at some point tonight, he will come to the stage and declare victory, no matter what the results are showing. And we do have the capacity in this country for division and even violence. Do you have concerns?
I do have concerns, and that main reason why I did not sleep last night, I am concerned that he will throw a few tantrums and may incite some violence across the nation. Either way it goes, right? And I'm just hoping that folks do not, you know, buy into it and, you know, don't participate. And I'm hoping at the very least that he's a little gracious, even though I've seen his rallies these last couple of weeks. It's been kind of wild, some of the things that he's been saying. And so just hoping that that isn't the issue tonight.
He does appear to be drained. I noted yesterday he was in North Carolina 2 days ago and thought he was in Pennsylvania. And I can understand this, and he is 78 years old, but he's no Jack LaLanne, and he's no Jack LaLanne when Jack was 95 years old. But Kamala has held up well. And in the old days, she, of course, is an attractive candidate. But in the old days, at 60 years old, she would have been considered old. Mm-hmm. She's older than to put it in perspective, she's older than Richard Nixon was when he won in 1968. He was born in 1913, so he was 55 in 1968, and then 59 when he was reelected. She's older than Nixon was in either election. People are living older. They're looking better at certain ages, but I think the presidency is a tough job, and we have this age limit that I can't understand at 35 to be president. Mm-hmm. Right now, you're not eligible to be president.
Right, right.
But somebody who's 105 is.
Yeah.
So I just don't get it. But age was a factor when Biden was running, and in the first debate, he cratered. Is age a factor now?
I don't think so in this moment. I feel like Kamala's pushing back on all of those social norms or ideologies. And I think what's so cool about her is the ability, I mean, even when you're at a rally or you're next to her, you're in a room with her, her ability to really excite the young folks. And that's something that we haven't seen in a while. And so I don't think that age is so much of an issue or a topic that people are voting on or based on this time around. I think she's really pushing back on that.
I'll ask Roy Fletcher when we visit with him in a bit, but about his candidate, Donald Trump. But what is it about Kamala Harris that you like?
What do I like about her? Well, I mean, I think I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, highlight the fact that I think she just does an exceptional job of representing women of color across this country. And also, like, understanding ideologies and politics through the lens of someone of color. I think that's important. I think it's something that America needs in this moment. And most importantly, she brings some more progressive views to the table than Biden did. And I think that's what's exciting so many people, including young people, even her stance on Palestine, what we've done around the issue with Israel. Like, I think she's really bringing more conversations that would not have happened had it been Biden at the top of the ticket. And it's exciting.
Well, Michigan is a state with a heavy population, a significant one of Arab Americans. And it appears that what's happening in the Middle East is not working into Kamala Harris's favor. Mm-hmm. And it's also apparent, I think, that Bibi Netanyahu is a supporter of Donald Trump, but as is Vladimir Putin. Putin has admitted it. That aside, who's better at resolving? You say reproductive rights is the biggest issue, and it may very well be, but we live in a dangerous world. Who's better? I think I know what the answer is, and why. Why do you think one candidate is better than the other at solving the problems of the world?
Mm-hmm. Just in what I've witnessed Kamala Harris being able to have in terms of conversations around a peace decision between Israel and Gaza and how we're moving forward and how we're moving out of Gaza. She has been probably arguably the only candidate in the last 4 years, including Biden himself, who has acknowledged the harm that has been done to the 40,000, almost 50,000 people that have lost their lives in the Middle East as a result of what happened on October 7th last year. And I think that is something that positions us to be able to do something about it. She has been able to entertain conversations on what it looks like to spend less money, send less bombs, more, ammunition to the Middle East. And I think that's important. And again, something that we weren't necessarily moving the needle on with Biden. And so I think she is the most poised candidate to get us into a better position as leaders of the free world, as folks that have, some type of allyship with Israel. I think it's really important for us to take a stand on what's happening in the Middle East right now. And she's poised to do that.
In Louisiana, it's all but apparent that Donald Trump will win here. In fact, in our state, in the last four elections, which included John McCain and Mitt Romney as the Republican nominees once each and Trump twice, all 64 parishes have voted the same. It's not a mystery how things will evolve here. But we do live in a state that has the second highest percentage of black residents in the country, and Mississippi only exceeds us. And if it were not for the choices made at the ballot box by black Louisianians, we would have had Senator David Duke and Governor David Duke. We have this massive, we're talking about the gender gap nationally, but it's a racial gap here. 80% or more of the voters today who are white will vote for Donald Trump, and more than 90% in Louisiana will vote for Kamala Harris. How do you explain that?
I'm so glad that you asked that question. I've been thinking about this, and that resonates with me quite a bit just because of the ground game that I've been running for the last few weeks, and then also had the privilege and honor of being able to travel this country and kind of see how folks are thinking, especially people of color, are thinking about voting and how they, you know, conceptualize the idea of voting differently than we do in Louisiana. And to be honest, all I can say is we have a lot of work to do, right? There's some deep-seated history. There's some issues that have not been talked about that need to be unpacked in order for us to
move. What are those issues, as you say?
The issue of race, you know, and I think we've got to get comfortable about saying that. The way in which we talk about race, and then I also would be remiss if I did not mention, we're also still the second in the nation for the most formerly incarcerated persons in the country. And I think that's still a barrier. Heck, I have two young ladies who were phone banking with me today who were formerly incarcerated who didn't realize they had the option or the opportunity to vote or restore their rights as voters, and that again is another barrier that's preventing a great bit of what would be voters being unable to tap into that voting block. And so I think it's important for us to kind of unpack race, have that conversation, help people understand how to restore their rights as formerly incarcerated people despite race, and then also get to this real deep-seated problem in the state of Louisiana around apathy and around inability to tap into that political power.
You're hearing Caitlin Joshua, who recently was featured in Vogue magazine. I mean, really featured, right?
Yeah. Cover of Glamour. I've got Glamour's Woman of the Year this year, which is really cool.
It was Cover of Glamour. Cover of Glamour. That's strong stuff from a girl from Baton Rouge. She'll be back, and we'll hear from Roy Fletcher when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, our election eve broadcast is yesterday, and lots of people were chiming in, and today I'm getting mostly responses by email. If you'd like to send one, it's talk@talklouisiana.org, and our number is 877-217-5757. One of our favorite listeners, and it's about time to have him back on the show, Raymond Jetson, just sent a note saying, please give my best to Caitlin Joshua, who is here, and she's now been joined by the esteemed political consultant, Roy Fletcher. Grew up in the great hamlet of Shreveport, where he went to Shreveport Woodlawn and was a classmate of the great quarterback Joe Ferguson. And because of the alphabet, they sat together in every class or near each other. And all these years later, he has converted from a Democrat to a Republican. He did so 29 years ago when he put Mike Foster in the governor's mansion. And now, after working with John McCain, who was slammed and slammed hard by Donald John Trump, he's become an avid Trump supporter. And it's good to have you with us again, Roy Fletcher.
Thank you, Jim.
What is it about this man that you like?
He's iconoclastic, and he's a political outsider. And I became much more that way as I went along in life. And he's a populist. And many of the things that he says, I heard in 1980s from Democrats, that when I was a Democrat. Richard Gephardt in particular was a very vocal trade guy like Trump is. Yeah, well, and that's always been one of my key voting things since 1970s. When I saw our economy literally fall apart, and the Japanese were just kicking us all over the damn place.
You were then and are now still working for some Democrats. In fact,
absolutely.
One of them is Cleo Fields.
Cleo Fields, yes.
Who's absolutely on the ballot today.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think he'll win today?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so. I think he's done a really good job of turnout. What you think, Kate?
That race, I don't know. I noticed there's one candidate in particular, Quentin Anderson, who's running against him. He's been running a good ground game too, so I'm interested to see how that one plays out.
Yeah.
He's a good candidate, but he has very few resources.
Yeah, so that's right.
And you gotta, as our friend Gus Weil said, you gotta have the dough.
Oh.
The dough. You gotta have the dough.
What did Jesse Unruh used to say? Money is the mother milk of politics.
Buddy Romer co-opted that line,
yeah, he
too.
Did, yeah, didn't he? Yes, he did.
And there is a lot of truth to that. And Donald Trump is a guy who 10 years ago had never run for office. He was the Sid Edwards of his day.
He was the Sid Edwards of it. Well, I think he was probably a little more vociferous than Sid.
Well, Sid, it's hard not to like this guy. Oh, here he spends election eve at football practice with his Estruma team.
You got to
like it. You know, the hay's in the barn. Let's see what happens. But this is a race for the ages. And every time I hear the most important election in the history of this country, but Caitlin, I think the division in America is reflected by the candidates, and not so much in Kamala's case for what she says, but what she represents. Mm-hmm. She is black, she's Asian, she's mm-hmm. female, she's from San Francisco, she's an interracial marriage to a Jewish man. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, a political consultant would say, you can't win with that, but she's in a race with Donald Trump, who's a wounded warrior. But he is fearless, and I'm sure against the advice of his handlers, Roy, he's got to be saying, he's saying all the things they're telling him not to say, and he does so, if he wins, with impunity.
Yes, he does. I mean, there's one of the things about him is he's so damn authentic, and that, I mean, he may stretch the truth, but he's a damn pretty authentic guy when it comes to what his core beliefs are. She is She's been a good candidate, but I think that she had to do what she had to do, given where she's from and the political party and the whole deal. So that just made it a close race. And remember, at the first of the year, I was one of those who said, well, Trump can't beat anybody but Biden. And if he wins today, and we'll see. The fact is that he stumbled through and did. Well, and it's a hell of a deal.
He would have defeated Biden.
He would have.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
so, too. He would have defeated, and Biden would have brought down Democrats in other places in the country. Now,
I happen to agree with my old friend James, though, is that they could have done that thing with her a little differently. James was the whole notion of you go to the convention and let them fight it out, all of the candidates. And I tend to agree.
Well, that would have been a bloodbath, and it would have been hard to recover from that. Can you imagine if someone other than Kamala had gotten the nomination? There would, I'm sure as a Republican, you would have loved it. Roy in his red and Caitlin in her blue.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're wearing their team colors.
That's right.
They call Alabama the Crimson Tide, and they call me Deacon Blue.
Well, there you go. Deacon Blue, I like that.
Now, Trump embraces self-created image as a strong man.
Yeah.
And he's called Vladimir Putin a genius. He's called President Xi of China a brilliant man. Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, very honorable. The president of Egypt, my favorite dictator. The crown prince of Saudi Arabia, a great guy. And I could go on and on. And Prime Minister Viktor Orban of Hungary, one of the most respected men. Is that just Trump being Trump, or does he really have this affinity for leaders who have their thumb on their people?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is that I think it's Trump being Trump in a way. But another thing is that I think that what it's a recognition of reality that these people run their countries. They are major players, and he's got to deal with them. So, you know, I mean, if you're selling something and you got to deal with somebody, maybe you need to, as my old friend Gus Wild would say, Roy, see, you get over there and deal with that young man.
Well, Caitlin, do you find Trump alarming, disturbing, or just amusing, or all of the above? What's your take on
it? Definitely not amusing. I think his rhetoric is too dangerous. You know, there are too many people out there that will take what he's saying literally, carry out dangerous things. You know, even what he said about Liz Cheney the other day, like these are very harmful, and he uses his words way too lightly. It can incite violence. It can cause, you know, an uproar on how the election falls tonight. And then most importantly, Lord say the same, this doesn't happen. No offense, Roy, but let's say he were to get in there. Like for what Trump stands for, it's just completely demoralizing. It is not the type of individual that I think this country wants to align themselves with. And most importantly, it may be Trump being Trump, but you know, when you're a wealthy man, white man, you know, that upholds the patriarchy, you can say those things and walk away from it and be totally fine with it. But for those of us who live regular everyday lives, we have to really deal with the consequences of a Trump presidency, and I don't think it's worth it.
All right, let's go to some callers, and please be brief if you will. 877-217-5757. Roy Fletcher on the right, Caitlin Joshua on the left.
Sort of.
Depending on where you're sitting.
Yes, Zach, that's right.
Zach in South Baton Rouge. Zach, good morning. Hi, Zach.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. What's your question, my friend?
When are we going to stop saying that Trump is just being Trump and he's, you know, stretching the truth when you know this man is lying every time he says something. And I mean, you can factually check that. So why would we continue to say like this is something normal for this person to continue to lie?
All right. I think the question was, is it Trump being Trump? It wasn't, he is Trump being Trump. But Zach, you, I appreciate your comments. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Mr. Fletcher, as a Trump supporter, are you aware when Trump was president, well, Bob Woodward interviewed Trump, and he said he knew how serious the COVID was, but he downplayed the seriousness because he was afraid it was going to hurt the economy and hurt his chances for re-election. Now, Trump has asked, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Isn't it a shame we can't ask the 1,200,000 Americans who died from the COVID? I wonder what they would say.
I'm just going to just pass that because I don't want to talk about who died and when.
Well,
I mean, with all due respect.
Well, that affected the 2020 election,
yeah, absolutely.
Which I firmly believe Trump lost and lost decisively. But I love, some people hate it, but I love doing the alternate reality sometimes. Let's say Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, and she almost did. If she had run for re-election in 2020 against Donald Trump, that would have been a very tough race for her.
It would have, yeah.
We might have Trump running for re-election right now.
We could very easily have that. Yes. Absolutely. The truth, though, is that, I mean, I will say one thing, is that we have a record of Trump as president. That's I mean, all of the machinations, he was president for four years.
It is a mixed record, but as most presidents have.
As most presidents have.
But people on both sides, and they're many sides, there are many more than two on this one.
Absolutely.
They get upset when I say nice things about Trump or bad things about
him.
But on the record, I think he's done a terrible job as far as uniting the country. Mm-hmm. Although John Schneider, Dukes of Hazzard guy who lives in Livingston Parish, he says he's the great uniter, Roy. He reunites his core.
Yeah.
I think he absolutely fires up his base, but let's understand something. His base is not, and this is the great difference, his base is not rich people. His base is blue-collar working people.
And, I think that's the scariest part, though, right? Like, it's blue-collared folks that don't understand.
She's on to something here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's blue-collar folks that don't understand the impact of a Trump president. They, like, literally, I saw them cheer when he said, no, don't raise minimum wage. And they interviewed a guy afterward the rally, and he says, I make minimum wage. It's like, y'all, what is the cognitive dissonance there?
You're suggesting that blue-collar whites, workers, blue-collar period, it were black, white, or whatever, that they're not smart enough to figure out what's in their best interest? I have always had the belief that the American public is always able to figure out what's in their best interest. Personally, they always do. I mean, I've taken a position.
Sometimes it takes time.
Though. It does take time.
As Martin Luther King said, the arc of history is long, but it tilts toward justice.
And longevity.
And we've got another quarter hour to go with two fired up partisans, Roy Fletcher and Caitlin Joshua on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Roy Fletcher, who worked for John McCain, and John McCain represented the sea change in Louisiana politics, and that Baton Rouge used to be a red city in a blue state. Now we're that's what we are, what we were. Now we're a blue city in a red state, but in 2008, that's when the change came in Baton Rouge.
Yep.
George Bush II carried East Baton Rouge Parish twice by comfortable margins, and then in 2008 it went Democratic, and now it's going Democratic in a big way. And all 64 parishes have voted the same the last four times out. So Donald Trump wins in Louisiana tonight. He wins at least 12 of the 13 SEC states, although our friend Jim Kitchens has Florida as a possibility for Kamala Harris. He does have, I think he has Trump in front now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it's 48.51 to 48.50. That's a dead heat.
Got money on that.
So you don't believe Kitchen's numbers. He's got her ahead in almost all the swing states.
No, I don't.
Why not?
First of all, I don't even understand the methodology that he's using. I just don't get it. And number two is that it does not comport with everything that that I've seen in numbers, and it doesn't, I mean, I'm not talking about public, I'm talking about, and it doesn't comport with what I know about this campaign.
Well, that's what people said 8 years ago when our friend Daryl Glasper sat here and said Trump's going to win, and he picked it almost state for state.
I did too.
In 2016?
In 2016.
But, of course, you also picked him to win in 2020.
I did. But in 2016, I picked him, and I picked Brexit before him passing
in
England.
Okay. But James Carville and others believe that, ultimately, we won't have a long night. I think whoever wins Pennsylvania will win, but Pennsylvania may not matter.
It may not.
But I think whoever wins that state will win the election. But 5 of the 7 swing states supposedly will swing one way or the other, and we won't have to spend 5 days waiting to see who the president is. Why do you believe it's going to swing for Kamala Harris? What's happened in the last week? And it does show that she has gained ground in the last week, but she had some making up to do. What's happened in the last week?
Yeah, certainly. I think we have to look at, one, the amount of rallies she's done in those specific states, and how many ads have gone out around reproductive health care. And those ads are making a difference. If you notice the polling, the small, minute changes that happen literally overnight just with an ad dropping. I think the most recent one was, see a conservative woman walking in the booth, you know, voting against her husband who doesn't know that she's voting on the issue of reproductive health care and abortion access. And I think that is what is going to save us in this country, ultimately, in those swing states, especially states like Iowa, where a lot of women that normally would be conservatives are voting, quote unquote, against their husbands, is kind of the rhetoric that we've been using on the campaign trail.
All right.
That's the argument. That's the spin.
Well,
I mean, then there's the other side.
I think there'll be a 10-point gap. Both sides, men and women, what Kitchen said is that most of these pollsters, and it's done largely because they've underpolled with Trump. They've got it at 50-50 men and women to counter the underpolling of Trump. He's got it 52-48, I think.
It should be 52-48.
Well,
it should be.
Well, his numbers are more favorable for her.
2020 was 53-47 women.
Okay,
and I mean, and no poll have I seen that has it 50-50. Nobody going to poll that. If they do, they're just being stupid.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Why, thanks as always, Jim. It should be ladies and children and ladies first. Miss Joshua, good morning. Mr. Fletcher,
morning.
Jim, and the audience. I'd like your guests to comment on the book that was written by 27 renowned psychiatrists and psychologists who deem Mr. Trump dangerously psychotic. Do you think they have a valid point?
All right. I'd rather not go there, but he is, shall we say, unhinged at times, but I don't think he's psychotic. I think he's fully aware of what's going on. But Roy, there are people who view him as dangerous. You obviously do not.
I don't, no. And I just look at the 4 years it was.
Well, and once again, people don't like it when I say things about Trump that might be considered as favorable to him, but he was president for 4 years, and he didn't get us in a war like his Republican predecessor did, a war that was uncalled for.
Yeah, and then he took a couple of bold actions that kept us out of war.
He says things that scare the hell out of people, including me.
Yeah, I get it. And, you know, I mean, I think he scares a lot of...
But, okay, what about Ukraine? Does Ukraine just go away? Do we quit funding them if he's president?
I don't think so. I think what he does is he figures out a way to talk to Putin. And I think he's got a way. It seems to me that he's pretty obvious that he knows what he wants to tell Putin directly.
Well, he's probably going to give Putin most of the country.
I don't know. I mean, there was an argument at the beginning that if you allowed Donbass to go, you would be able to avoid blowing up the whole damn country. And we are now 3 years down the road, and the damn country's blown up, and a lot of people are killed.
But he called Putin a genius when he invaded, and I don't think he's a genius. I think he's a damn fool.
Well, the question was, when he invaded, I think what his point was is that he took the right time to invade. And that was his point, is that we just got out of a Afghanistan, and Cephalos starts.
All right. Well,
and we look foolish, and then Trump wasn't there, that was his
point. Putin, a genius, has now lost 700,000 men in a country that's losing population. Some kind of a genius, and he's another one of these strong men who can't bench press his weight, Roy. He's not a tough guy.
Well,
he talks tough, but he's not.
Well, we don't know if
he can bench. Take his poison away from him. He's not very tough.
You don't know if he can bench press his weight.
I can tell by looking at a guy.
You can?
I can.
Yeah.
About 90% of the time, yeah,
well,
I can.
That's interesting, but he, I mean, the fact is he's a leader of a major country in this world.
All right, well.
And a real troublemaker.
What about Ukraine? It is odd that the Republican Party, because of Trump, is now the party of tariffs. That used to be a Democratic
party of peace. Thank you.
And now the party of the doves, and the Democrats are the hawks. But is it hawkish to support Ukraine, Caitlin?
Is it hawkish to support Ukraine?
Yeah. To continue that war, to fund their resistance to the invasion.
Absolutely.
Is that hawkish?
I don't think it's hawkish. In by the definition of hawkish being
pro-military.
Well, and also it is perpetuating a war.
Mm-hmm.
They're not laying their guns down.
No, not at all. And if I'm honest, y'all, and I've studied like the Ukraine Russia situation for quite some time, and it does keep me up at night. I'm not really certain like what the solution is there. I do know that we've got to keep supporting Ukraine as much as possible. What that looks like going forward, I can't say.
All right, Steve Myers just sent a note. He's on the trail.
The question I have for this is simple: is that do you want to spend the money there? Or where do you want to spend the money? Is there another place you want to spend the money?
There's plenty of places that I want to spend the money.
But there are implications to losing there. Putin might be bold enough to go into Poland. But Steve Myers says he's campaigning on Thomas Delpit Boulevard as we speak. I wonder if he's seeing your client, Nathaniel Hearn.
I suspect.
Okay. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Roy and Caitlin. Hi, James.
Well, hi, Jim. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. If you haven't voted, please go out and do so. Jim, my question to you is, your friend Jim Kitchens, does he have a poll either validate or not address that shock poll that we heard about in Iowa over the weekend? And thank you.
Well, he's not polling in Iowa. He's only polling in the swing states, but it appears Iowa may very well be a swing state. That was the Des Moines Register poll, a legitimate survey. But, Roy, you don't believe that one either, do you?
I mean, I listened to it, and 2 hours later, Emerson come out with a Trump 10 ahead. Now, what does practicality tell me?
Well, based on history. But Obama won in Iowa twice, I believe.
I know. I think he did. The question I have was, okay, well, if I believe that one, do I believe the one in Minnesota or the one in Virginia? I don't know. I can't.
Well,
everybody's got a data point on this thing.
Their polling, though, the Des Moines Register, has been accurate in the past, and this came out of nowhere. But I can say this, though. It's apparently not being taken that seriously by either candidate because neither one went to Iowa.
Yeah.
That's right. That's.
So I think Trump probably wins Iowa, but if a race is close in Iowa, just like if a race is – it's not good for Trump, and if a race is close in Minnesota – that's not good for Harris. That usually spells trouble in other states.
All that Atlas Intel had Harris up two in Minnesota, but Trump hadn't gone there.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
Tonight,
you're predicting Trump.
Yep.
Over 300 electoral votes.
Yes.
Okay. House and Senate.
The Senate will go 5 more Republican, maybe 6. House will go 10 to 12 more Republican.
All right, so you're predicting
they'll have control of the government.
Okay, Caitlin?
I am not going to disagree with him. I'm definitely
predicting
Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket for sure. I'm concerned about the House and the Senate.
Well, I think the Senate goes Republican.
I think so, too.
Heavily.
Yeah.
I think some of the Democrats are going to hold on, but it won't be as heavily as you say, I believe. But Roy could be right. He's certainly a legitimate observer. But in the House... Toss up. Mike and Lafayette.
Oh, it's absolutely a toss-up.
Let's slide you in, Mike. We've got to be brief, though. Mike, you're going to have the last word today. Mike and Lafayette. Go for it, friend.
Here it is. Oftentimes, statistical measures are used to predict the outcome of an election. they always tell you what the probability that there's, it's within the margin of error, but they, what they don't report hardly ever is how probable the sample is.
All right. Well, these are pros.
Motivation.
We'll see. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.